Here at Early Excellence, we specialise in early childhood education. We offer expert advice and guidance through training, consultancy and classroom design. With the Early Excellence podcast, we aim to inspire and support you as well as challenge your thinking. So if that's what you're looking for, you've come to the right place. Hello everybody, Andy Burt here. Welcome along to episode 196 of the Early Excellence podcast. In this week's episode, I'm joined by Anne Brass and Kate Jingles as we explore mixed age classes. Both Anne and Kate have been involved in an Education Durham project all about mixed age classes. And we've got lots of advice here, lots of do's and don'ts, lots of suggestions to how to get the best out of the different age ranges that you teach. So this is very much for anybody who is currently teaching within a mixed age class. So here you go. Here's my Early Excellence podcast chat with Anne Brass and Kate Jingles. So I'm delighted to say for this week's podcast that we are joined by Kate Jingles and Anne Brass. Kate and Anne, thank you very much for joining me.
It's a pleasure.
Oh, it's good to see you both. Are you both well?
Very good, thank you.
Very well, thank you.
Good, good stuff. So we're going to talk about all sorts of things to do with mixed age classes, aren't we? But before we get on to that, could we have a short introduction from both of you? Would that be all right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. My name's Anne Brass. I work for Durham Local Authority, where I'm a specialist early years advisor. And I've been in that role for, I wouldn't even like to say how many years now. And previous to that, a lot of years working as leading and teaching in the early years sector.
Brilliant. Thank you.
And as I said, I'm Kate, and I'm actually an early years lecturer now at Norland down in Bath. So we're a specialist early childhood higher education provider, and I lecture on the degree programme there. But as you know, Andy, I moved down from the Northeast. So I was really lucky when I came down to Bath a year ago that I was able to continue with this piece of work I'd started with Anne up in Durham, which I'm going to talk about today.
Very good. Fantastic. Thank you. So getting on to that project then, all about mixed age classes. Tell us about it. Tell us a bit about how it started or when it started. Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit about an overview of the project, if you would.
Yeah, no, that was really interesting, actually. And I think the project came at a really, really good time for us. We started back, it was only about just over a year ago now, I think it was the summer of 25, when we started pulling schools together and working with particular schools. But the project arose from a lot of difficulties and challenges that schools were facing in reduced numbers, maybe having to restructure. So in a lot of situations, some of the schools that were used to be just a single age phase within early years, so say reception, had to, through means out of their control, amalgamate and pull a mixed phase together. So reception year one classes were being formed, whereas previously they weren't. And because of the introduction of the entitlement in early years and school-based nurseries, we were getting some schools as well that were setting up a mixed phase that had reception and year and nursery children for the first time. So the whole of this project focused on the beginnings of and pre setting up that sort of provision and thinking about what do leaders and practitioners need to think about. So what we did was we actually asked a few schools or advertised, got a few schools across Durham, real range of schools who said they'd be interested in the project. And we set up and used a model that we've used quite a number of on a number of occasions really successfully in Durham, whereby we supported those schools in the setup of that provision through an advisory visit and through networks, but we brought in other schools who had been working in that way for a number of years as their buddy schools, so that they supported, and we allocated and identified schools to support different schools based on their context, based on experience. So we had a really big network around each of these individual schools where they could meet each other, where they could meet with the buddy, where they could meet and get support from an advisor. But it was all coordinated together. So that happened over the time of 18 months, really. So from beginning that phase right the way through towards the end of that very first year running as either a unit or reception year one, right across that time. And we also, Andy, thought that because we had a budget to actually sustain that for a year, beyond that, we didn't have the budget anymore. So we wanted something that would actually sustain the momentum and give support to other schools in that situation. And that's where Kate was brought in to look at documenting and giving the voice to the practitioners and leaders within the project to support us moving forward.
It sounds like a really powerful project. You know, it's really, I think from different points of view, I think that idea of having kind of buddying people up, I think is a very powerful way of working. It gives people somebody that they can rely on, of course, if they're just starting out, but it also gives the people who have been doing it for a while a bit of a boost as well, in that they feel like very much like the experts in this, and they've often forgotten how far they've come. You know, in teaching, I think we often kind of we're striving so much to get to the next thing and never quite feeling like we're there. But you kind of sometimes have to, I find this all the time, you have to remind people how far they've come within 6 months or a year, that actually, you know, this time last year you were grappling with the same issues, and now look at all of the different things you've got in place. So I think that's a really interesting model that you've worked with.
It's a really powerful model. It's a model we use in Durham quite a lot. And it's really based on knowing the schools who are becoming the experts, but also supporting them as well. Because what you find is this isn't just share the practice and tell everyone to do what you're doing. It's adapting. So we actually provided a lot of PD for those schools as well, in terms of advisory work, coaching, mentoring. And that was the bit that made this really powerful, because other schools setting up wanted to hear from someone who was walking their walk and talking their talk and had been in their shoes. So that, I think, was, that was a bit that made the difference within the project and had the most impact.
It strikes me as well that it's a model that will lead to openness.
Completely.
And trust, I think. And then I think unless you've got that, I think often projects really, it's very difficult, because people quite naturally will really kind of put on their best face and the best of what they do. But there are often issues underlying that actually we aren't always honest about, and that we don't say, well, I'm struggling with this and this isn't quite working, because it kind of feels like a weakness.
Absolutely.
But when you bring people up like that and people say, oh, you should have seen us 6 months ago, we were really all over the place, then you've got an honesty there where actually, you know, people are more likely to share with somebody else who's in the same boat, probably, and then you get an open conversation, I guess. And I guess that's what Kate comes in as well, isn't it? I guess that was part of your role too, Kate.
I think that's so true. I think people were really open in this project, really honest. I've had lots of really sort of deep conversations with people, and a lot of the conversations with teachers were, you know, not just about what they're doing, but about their perceptions of themselves as teachers, and how, you know, last year I could do this, I was an excellent reception teacher, and it's all gone wrong and I don't know what's happening. And people were really worried. You know, that first meeting we had, I mean, it's almost funny to look back on it really, Anne, because we were sat around that table in Durham and everybody was just saying, well, what on earth are we going to do with this? Like, what? How are we going to make this work? But the journey they went on to the end of the, there's not an end to the project really, is it? Because everyone's still doing it. But towards the point when we were coming to document everything, people were really positive about what they'd achieved, really proud of what they'd achieved, really grateful for the support they'd had. And the vast majority said that they, you know, felt their class had been a real success, or at least a partial success, and that there were things they would take from that and keep. Even if they didn't stay mixed age forever, there was going to be bits of that provision they would keep moving forward. So that was really nice to hear.
Yes. No, interesting. That early point where schools decide to then, you know, that they're going to go down that mixed age class route, I think is a really interesting one. Certainly from my point of view with the schools that I work with, I get the impression that up and down the country that more and more schools, because of a lower birth rate in certain areas and for other reasons as well, that actually more and more schools are looking into that mixed age class way of working. Is that something that you picked up from the project?
Yes, it definitely is. And across Durham as well, we're finding that more and more that we have got a lot more mixed age classes within the early years. So starting with reception, either end of reception, we've got a much wider age phase that are working together in the same space, which brings about a lot of challenges. And we have had in the past a few schools that have gone down that avenue of, and this was particularly around reception and nursery mix, set up their own nursery, amalgamated it with reception, and just thought it could run like a reception class. And actually, they came across a lot of challenges, and that was one of the instigators to actually set up this project in the first place, to actually have something that will then support schools who maybe can't buy into a lot of support, but will have something solid, as in the guidance document that we've worked together to produce, showing the voices and the key notes of what leaders need to think about and what practitioners need to think about, because there were so many. I think it's becoming, particularly with the school-based nurseries as well, it's really thinking about the needs of those younger learners and what does that look like when you've got them in a mix with older children as well, even though they're still the same EYFS space. So the difficulties and challenges within setting up a foundation unit, although there was a lot of similarities, there was also a lot of very things that were distinctly just for foundation units. But then at the other side for reception year one, there were some real distinct challenges for them that we didn't find with the setup of a foundation unit. So it was really interesting to see. And I think it was interesting to bring all parties together to talk about what were the challenges with reception year one and the challenges with setting up a nursery. But yes, it's much more prevalent at the moment and much more commonplace. And actually a really challenging thing to think about, that's got to be led by the senior leaders in the school and understood at that level as well.
And it needs to have a clear vision for what this will look like, doesn't it? I don't think you can start it with having that clear vision, even though it may evolve over time to a certain extent once you're doing it. I think it does need everybody, with anything within school, it needs a clear vision and it needs to be joined up, doesn't it? From the teacher and practitioner that are in the classroom to the people who are leading and the senior leadership team, because otherwise you tend to find that actually, I think teachers and practitioners get frustrated by different messages that they hear and they go, well, I thought we were doing this and you told me this last week, but now you're saying this and how does this fit? And understandably, that's not really going to work. And it does lead to, I think, frustrations.
I think that's the challenge of it, really, because I think it was kind of forced upon people in a way. The decision was almost, it had to be made because there wasn't enough children to fill two classes. There wasn't enough budget to staff two classes. So that kind of having a vision almost came second to the decision. Normally, when you want to change something in school, you have this vision of, well, we want to achieve this. This is what we want it to look like. And then you put those steps in place. Whereas this kind of almost started a little bit further ahead of that, kind of, we have to do it, so what's our vision going to be, and kind of having to work backwards in a way before you could go forwards, and that's tricky when there's not much guidance out there either. There's not a lot out there on mixed age classes, because our model in this country is you group children by age and they go up the school one by one, so it's a really tricky one.
And it was also really tricky, given what Kate's mentioned there, that for some schools, they saw this as a temporary thing, that this was only going to be for a year and next year we may go back to our pure classes again. For other schools, it wasn't. And I think what we found as a key part of what made impact and what actually made it work were the schools who had that long-term vision, that this isn't just going to be for now. Let's really invest in what we're doing so that leaders work with practitioners. And by practitioners, I mean everybody that's there, and work with parents to really establish something that is great and will have powerful and be meaningful, but will be long term. I think for those schools who struggled more, it was where we're not quite sure what's going to happen next year, so I'm not going to invest in it. And often that wasn't just the schools, that was leaders as well, because they were unclear. So I think given this, it's that thought about having that long-term vision, looking ahead to see what are the possibilities, and actually investing with leaders and practitioners and parents, with all stakeholders really, to make sure that this is something that does go through that process of having a vision, having clear planning, having clear communications, not just a knee-jerk reaction, right, we're going to do it, we'll do it for a year, let's just do it like this.
Yes, no, that makes perfect sense. It really does. And I wondered as well about the schools. Did you find that some schools kind of opened up that dialogue or opened up that I suppose those messages and the conversations that they're having within school with the wider school community? And what was the impact of that? You know, so did you find that some schools at that point early on said, well, we are going down this route of a mixed age class, and then they made sure that parents understood that and the reasons for it, and they put that together as a package? Did you find that? And interestingly, conversely, did you find that other schools didn't do that and then kind of had to backpedal a bit? You know, was that the case, I wonder?
Absolutely. I think that's exactly what we found. I think there were some schools where parents were almost the biggest challenge here, you know, particularly with reception year one, I think, and particularly in cases where year one classes were split. So where you have a situation where you've got a smaller reception cohort coming in, so you decide you're going to split year one, and some of those year ones are going to be with reception and others are going to be either with year two or just a year one class. For those schools, that was a real contentious issue, because there's all those perceptions around what is reception, what is year one, how are they different, what's that transition like? And parents understand those things as well, particularly in some of our schools. So there were some, it was very much context dependent, wasn't it, Anne? Some of the schools, it was the biggest thing they had to think about. Other schools, actually, the parents weren't that worried, and, you know, crack on and do whatever. But it really did vary. And there was definitely one head teacher I can think of who was saying, I'm so glad I opened up this conversation with parents early, because actually they had really strong opinions, and the head almost hadn't thought about it. It'd been very much led by the early years lead that actually, I think we should involve the parents in this. And she was right. It really, that needed to happen. And that's
absolutely. And because change can be stressful, can't it, for anybody, you know, and both within school, but also without school, that actually parents who are either prospective parents and they're about to send their child into a reception class that is becoming a reception year one class, and they're wondering, well, hang on a minute, is my child going to get a bit lost with all of these bigger children? But also those parents of year one children who are thinking, well, hang on a minute, we've just had reception, and now you're saying that it's going to almost feel like a repeat of the year, you know? That doesn't feel quite right either. And I'm sure schools wouldn't go about it, you know, in that way and setting that out in that way. But I would imagine that some parents would be thinking that, I guess.
Yeah,
so.
It's selling the vision, like you said, isn't it? But also selling the benefits. So there are, you know, there are potential benefits to being in a mixed age class in terms of older children kind of benefiting from that leadership role and younger children benefiting from those older role models. So really selling those and really celebrating those so that parents can see what everybody's getting from that, and not kind of just trying to be a second best to the pure age class, but saying, actually, we're something different, and that's fabulous too.
I think as well, what we'd found with some of the schools as well was that parents do have a voice, but sometimes parents have a very loud voice and a strong voice that's only looking at their individual children. And what we found for some schools was that they're really, a key message from a lot of the schools we worked with was, absolutely engage with parents, share with parents, really celebrate the fact that this is going to be something different, as Kate said, that's actually going to be really positive for everyone. But at the same time, really focus on this is happening. And not to listen to every single individual voice who wants something just for an individual child. And there did come a point with a few of our schools where they said, this is what we are doing, rather than negotiate, negotiate, negotiate. I think it's having clear guidance at the beginning to say, this is what we're doing, this is who we're going to involve, and this is what it's going to be like, and we'll come with you, we want you to be on this journey, rather than how do you want it to be? If that makes sense. That sounds quite harsh, but I think that was a message that came through.
It was, and
clearly.
In terms of class allocation as well, so in terms of where, in the case where you were splitting year one children, schools being really firm about, this is how we're separating the class, and these are the reasons why. This is why these children will benefit from being in the reception year one class. This is why these children will benefit from being in the year one, year two class. And schools having a really clear idea of why they'd made those decisions, so that everybody knew what the story was for parents. And that was very, it's clarity, isn't it? Parents need clarity and communication.
They do. Yeah, It's also, I think, about separating out the stress that people feel when change is happening with actual comments about how it's going to run. That sometimes people will be against something. Their initial feeling will be that actually they are going to be against it because this will be chaos or it will be change, and that's stressful. But actually, interestingly, you do something, whatever it might be, that is that change. And then a year later, you say to people, okay, what do you think about changing back? And they say, oh, no. And it's because actually, you know, they weren't really against doing it as such. It was just the change, and they don't even want to change back once it's done. You see what I mean? It's the change that is the tricky thing, not
the actual. And that's about having knowledge and confidence, isn't it? And as a parent, having the knowledge and confidence that your school is doing the best by your child. And that comes down to leadership and setting out very clearly the rationale behind why we're doing what we're doing and the positive outcomes that we are going to be looking at for individual children.
Absolutely. Let's go back then. Having talked about that bigger picture, let's really focus in then on the classroom practice and on the adults and everything else that's happening within that space. Kate, I think you mentioned that some of the teachers and practitioners in that situation sometimes feel like the rug has been pulled from under them. That, you know, if you're a very effective year one teacher and you're confident and experienced, and then suddenly you find that actually you're going to be in a reception year one class and you've never taught EYFS before, it will suddenly feel like the rug has been pulled from under you. Or, you know, if you are a reception teacher and you've never taught in Key Stage One, suddenly it will feel like all of the things you used to do that you knew that worked really well, suddenly some of that might have gone. It might not have done, but actually will feel like that. What did you find as part of the project, you know, in relation to how staff were used, in relation to their skills, their knowledge, their understandings? How did schools cope with that change and how to support their staff with change in that way?
I mean, I think you've summarised it really well there in terms of how people were feeling. And I think it was so important, as Anne's mentioned a few times really already, that leaders were very much involved as well. So this was very much something that was about the leadership team working on this as well as the class teacher. So this wasn't a class teacher on their own feeling isolated, thinking I've got to do all this by myself, because you can't. It's got to be a kind of a whole school initiative. So I think that's the first thing. Something else that came up very strongly was that the EYFS knowledge and experience was really, really important. So, you know, even in that year one reception mix, actually having knowledge of the early years foundation stage and really good quality early years practice really supported those teachers. It seemed easier to kind of work from early years and then bring in year one rather than try and do that the other way round. I think that came through quite strongly. And then the whole staff team, you know, having enough adults. And this was a challenge as well, because obviously for a lot of the schools, part of the reason why they were becoming mixed age was because of budget and staffing and all those kinds of tricky, challenging things. But actually having enough adults to make this work was something that people really relied on. So having their teaching assistant, having that consistency of adults within the room was important. And the buddies, like Anne said, because that was a real source of support. So having that person that could come in and say, oh, have you tried just moving that table over there? You know, really small things sometimes, but that can make a huge difference.
I think it's about self-belief as well. Is obviously the knowledge and skill around the approaches, the pedagogy for early years, I think was essential. Not so much curriculum, but about how do we work, especially in the reception year one group, that if it was somebody who's come from year one, moving into a mixed phase, what is the pedagogical approach and actually how can that benefit year one in those areas? But I think what we found was individuals respond differently to change. And particularly practitioners who are really, really good at what they do, when it's change and brings in sometimes another year group, and particularly if it's reception year one, that practitioner can actually lack the confidence in that. And again, it's having an awareness of leaders to understand that this can really affect somebody, even though it looks like it doesn't. And we had a number of schools where this was the case, and I think this is exactly where the buddies came in, that actually offered that support. But if you haven't got a buddy, what do you do? And that's about leadership awareness of, even though we've got an excellent practitioner, this is something that is very different, because they're now balancing something that goes beyond their security blanket. And if you've got reception year one, and some of the year ones are with you in reception and some are somewhere else, that brings another dimension to it, where it's that guilt of, I'm doing this a little bit differently in here. The other year ones are doing it in a different way. Is that okay? And I think sometimes it was just someone sitting with someone going, it's absolutely fine. And that's what you would expect.
Mm-hmm. A lot of the teachers, as we've gone through, that's been the kind of comments they've made when I've been talking to them, and when they've been filling in things for me. It's been, you know, I've had to learn to be flexible. I've had to learn that it's okay if it's different. I've had to learn that it's okay if it's not the same as the other class. That kind of just acceptance that, you know, you can do the same thing in many different ways, basically, can't you? And realizing that it doesn't have to look like it's always looked. It doesn't have to look like it looks in the classroom next door. It can still be good practice, as long as you're thinking about your children and what they need.
Yes. I also wonder, just to sort of, this is an aside really, that particularly in the last few years since the COVID pandemic, we have seen a real change, and everybody is aware of this, in terms of the needs of children coming into schools and settings. And I wonder whether actually for some schools this felt like the right move anyway, even though they've had to make the decision for other reasons, you know, around budgets, like you say, or class sizes and so on. But actually, for some schools, it may well have been the right move anyway to go to a reception year one class based on the needs of the children at the end of EYFS. I wonder whether that came into the conversations.
Absolutely. We've talked about that a lot, haven't we, Anne? It was kind of, that was one of those things where within the documentation we were thinking, do we have a section all about this? Or is this, in the end, it's something that threads through, because it was such a huge issue and such a huge part of the decision-making process and the practice for all of those schools in terms of managing the huge range of needs, you know, even in a single age class, the huge range of needs that people are dealing with at the moment.
Absolutely. I think for some schools as well, that approach actually even then threaded into further up the school. So the approach of what it was like in the mixed phase class as opposed to the single age classes, where there was much more flexibility, much more responsiveness to children rather than a delivery of a set curriculum. And I'm talking more about the reception year one again here. That approach actually filtered into the rest of the school. And there was a couple of schools, one in particular that I'm thinking about, that then reflected on their approach in other year groups to look at how do we need to be more flexible in our approach and ensure that children are actually, their needs are met in an effective way. And curriculum, actually, yes, it does come first, but it doesn't. It comes second to being responsive to children. And I think that was a really big shift in one school.
I think that's really interesting. I think when I personally have seen mixed age classes work, and I'm probably thinking more about sort of reception year one classes here. This does happen in an EYFS unit, but I think it's more obvious to a certain extent in a reception year one class. Initially, what you tend to find is that people will look at these as two separate year groups with two separate sets of documentation, and they get really caught up in the, I'm trying to follow that and I'm trying to follow that and I don't know where I am. And then gradually you see them starting to let go of the documentation and kind of keep it at arm's length and use it as a reference point. But instead of really following all of that in minute detail, they start to sort of step away from it and look at this group of children, however many children that might be, 20 children, and they start to go, well, I know these 20 children really, really well, and I'm now looking at it with my experience as a teacher. I know I'm looking at this group as one group, and I'm thinking, right, what does that child need? Regardless of whether they're in year one or whether they're in reception, what does that child need next? What's their next step? And to me, that's when you get to really effective practice within a mixed age class, when we start to kind of keep the documentation to one side to a point, and we start to just think about using our skills and expertise to identify what are the next steps for each individual or each group within that class, even if they might be from different year groups.
We absolutely found that. And I think going into it for reception year one classes, they first of all were hung up on timetable and how do we fit things in and logistics, and didn't actually think about curriculum and children first. So we took them back to thinking about the two curriculums and how actually they're not that different. It might be the pedagogical approach that appears much more different to depending on how the schools were set up. But we did take them back to that and then look at how does that evolve. And one school in particular that we're still working with now, because we're into phase two of the provision, where they spent a lot of time looking at the links with curriculum, the links of how it worked. And what they've come round to evolving into is a stage, not age approach. So they're looking at a progression all the way through from their reception through into year one, because they've got mixed reception year one, rather than what do these two curriculums look like and I've got to teach them separately, which was what they were first looking at. And I think that's something you evolve into, and you've got to try something somewhere to find that it doesn't work. And yes, we've had quite a few schools who initially were trying to balance two curriculums, two different ways of working, essentially two classes. One, it's physically impossible to do that. Two, it's not cost productive. It doesn't support the children. And how on earth can they use and access a provision if they're taught two different things in different ways? And it was the journey that this particular school has really been on. And when I visited a few weeks ago, and I went and it was lovely. What was happening was absolutely lovely. And people knew who were the children who were year one, who were the children who were reception. But actually, you couldn't distinguish between the curriculums, the teaching, because actually it was taught to the child. And depending on where that child was and where that child lived. But that's a journey that I think comes with confidence. And again, I'm going to go back to leadership. Leadership allowance and expectation that actually we're going to do this, we're going to do it a little bit differently, not expect to have the same expectations as we would for a pure year one class. And the head teacher at this school has actually quoted on a number of occasions that this is actually her dream and it's working so well. Brilliant. Because of that.
Yeah, you can't possibly have a kind of what would be a whole class teaching session for your reception children and then sort of send them off and then have your year one whole class teaching and then have your group work for reception and then your group work for year one. You're just going to end up using the whole day on a treadmill, aren't you? Yeah, and just on directed teaching without really forming the relationships and doing all of those other really important things. And you end up, I think, probably with teachers and practitioners who don't feel satisfied and also burn themselves out doing that as well as. So you're right, I think there has to be another way of doing it. And that involves the logistics, looking at logistics of it and staffing, but it also looks at, it means that we have to look at the timetable and getting that right, doesn't it, as you say, and thinking about that. I'm interested to know as well, as part of the project, did you find that schools then started to look at the resources that they have had within the provision, both in terms of as an EYFS unit, but also as a reception year one class? Were they looking at resources that they've used previously and then thought, well, actually, do you know what? This now needs something else, either as well as, or it needs to be a different resource, perhaps? Did you find that as part of the project?
Yeah, this was another kind of starting point. I think people go in initially and they want to, as Anne says, they want to start with the timetable because you're thinking, right, what am I going to do tomorrow? And they also want to start with the classroom and, well, how am I going to arrange the room? So that was a big part of it at the beginning, especially. And even beyond the resources, just how much space people had. So often there was kind of two classes available because there'd been a merging of classes. So people were thinking, well, should we spread out across these two rooms? And realising that actually in terms of, as you say, managing and that with staffing and managing that within your day, that became very difficult. So actually people then combining their provision, so actually we'll use one of the spaces and we'll combine things so that children can access areas of provision within the same space, the same outdoor area perhaps. But then looking at those resources and really looking at, you know, how are things earning their place? You know, very much what you do all the time, Andy, at Early Excellence. How are these things earning their place within our provision? How are these things earning their place on the shelf? You know, what potential do they have? What's the level of challenge on offer for them? And also, interestingly, sort of risk assessing things. And that was more true in the foundation stage units. So I think that was where people were finding that actually, you know, I'd love to have these activities for my reception children, but when I've got young three-year-olds, that's just not going to work. You know, the pieces are too small, or they're not going to be able to use it. So that really training children to use provision, really focusing in on children that need that support, really taking the time to teach the children what's there and what it's for, was really important. You know, it's not possible to set things up so you can say, right, year one, you're going to access this shelf, and reception, you're going to access this shelf. That's not going to happen. It's thinking across the whole provision, have you got that range?
Mm-hmm. And that was really prevalent with the foundation units. I think once we looked at resourcing and space, this is when it became a little bit different, although there was the common thread. And the common thread for reception year one and for foundation unit was progression. How can we ensure that we've got an environment that allows our children to be taught at the level that they actually are, given we've got a wider developmental level? And with the foundation units, the whole of our networks actually became a focus on how we develop the environment to support the range of children that we've got, with different levels of language, different levels of need, different interest levels. And to do what Kate was saying there, think about how can this space work for all children? And we looked a lot at common play behaviours and what play skill and level of play skill children would actually be accessing an environment with. We also looked at the level of language that would be used there, because it was about the interactions of adults to ensure that children were actually supported at their right level. Because in your home, you wouldn't have different shelves for the different ages of children, would you? It's all the same stuff that you're using. It's the way you interact with it. But there was an awful lot of discussion with foundation units about how do we support progress. And this was with practitioners who understood EYFS, who were really embedded in that pedagogical approach, but actually needed to widen their door to a lower developmental level, essentially. With the reception year one, it was about, now that I'm a bit more confident of year one accessing provision, what does that look like in a year one context? It wasn't about reception. And in a lot of reception year one classes initially, it was year one accessing the reception environment, which obviously needed adapting, needed tweaking in terms of how it was supported, what was offered, when it was offered. So although it was about progression and suitability, it looked very different in both of those different mixed phase groups. And again, that was a journey, and it's the different contexts, yeah.
It's more a focus on curriculum, isn't it, in that reception year one mix, I think, really. Looking at the Key Stage 1 curriculum, and I think, you know, we would probably all agree, I'm sure, that you could teach year one through continuous provision if you planned it really carefully and if you really thought about what resources you had and how they matched up to those curriculum objectives. So I think for that year one reception mix, it was starting with that curriculum first. What's our intent? What is it we want children to learn? Which resources enable them to do that? And if there's things that you can't learn in that way, how are we going to teach that? Is that the time when we do have to take year one off separately and do something as a group with them, because it doesn't fit into that provision?
Yes, that flexibility in terms of deciding the best way to teach something is key, isn't it? That not everything can be taught through continuous provision, as you say. Some things are better taught directly, either as a whole class or as a small group. But there are some things that definitely you need to be doing within your continuous provision, either to embed learning over time or to enable children to experience things and to develop language and communication skills. So that, yeah, there are lots of things, aren't there? It's interesting as well. I think you've got to be quite careful, a bit like what I said earlier about that some schools will look at it as two separate things and try and fill the timetable in that way. At the same time, there is a danger that you look at your reception resources and say, right, well, let's bring in all of the year one resources, and you've just got twice the number of resources there, and it's not going to work because it's all cluttered. In a similar way, what you probably have to do is to look at which resources earn their place, as you said, Kate, and to be thinking about, well, certain resources are, to a certain extent, more valuable because of their open-endedness. That actually the same resource could be used by a child who is in nursery and they will do a certain thing with it. The same resources could be used in reception and into Key Stage 1, but actually those different ages and stages of children, they will do completely different things with them, and that you see progression with that. And I think that that is crucial, I think, so you don't end up with too many resources, really.
Yeah, absolutely. And being able to articulate that, isn't it? It's staff being able to articulate exactly what you've just done and saying, this is how our youngest children are going to use it. This is how we're hoping that's going to progress over time, so that there's not that feeling that everybody's just repeating what they did last year. There's not that feeling that it's that horrible phrase of kind of low-level play. There's none of that conversation because everybody knows what things are for and why they're there. It's a whole team approach again.
And again, that goes back to it's your curriculum and pedagogy. Your environment is a result of your curriculum and pedagogy. So what do you want children to learn? So how can we allow children and support children to practice and apply those skills and explore them through their own fascinations through what we offer in the environment? So that starts with your learning, doesn't it? Your pedagogical approach, and this was the biggest shift for Reception Year One, was how do we allow them to do that and what do I do to facilitate it? And if we had teachers who were more Key Stage 1, Key Stage 2 based and didn't have that experience of early years, they were the ones that found that more challenging because they didn't understand that aspect of continuous provision and play and how actually it needs a lot of support. And I'll quote Julie Fisher on this. It's about independent, not ignored learning as well. And that was a big shift for some of our practitioners in terms of, but if that group are doing that on their own and I'm not there, then they're not learning. So it's about how you get those pedagogical approaches into your timetable. So it's about that deployment of adults, but the focus of what are they doing in that time, even though children are working in continuous provision. If your year ones have been set a challenge, or if they're freely accessing through inquiry models a continuous provision, how do you then, what's the role of the practitioner then? Because it's not standing at the front and leading, it's actually facilitating that instead. And I think that takes an awful lot of support to enable some practitioners to be really confident in that and being able to articulate it to anyone who comes in to say, well, what are you doing? Why are you doing that? And again, in the best provision, that happened when leaders understood that alongside the practitioners.
Yes, it's about confidence, isn't it? And knowledge and understanding, but all of those things across not just that classroom, but across the school, so that the teacher or practitioner isn't being asked for things they haven't got by the maths lead because they're working in a very hands-on way and they maybe don't have everything in a book in the same way as they might have done previously. But it's also about the teacher who's in that mixed age class sharing and being open about the way that they're working and why they are doing it in that way with the subject lead. So it's not being closed and expecting the subject lead to just know. It's about having those open conversations, really, I think, and being confident with that. That's challenging. It's not easy. But certainly it's about learning to facilitate. For those teachers, as you say, in Key Stage 1, if they've worked in Key Stage 1 and they've worked very much in a directed model, direct teaching model, they won't be used to facilitating and it will feel like they're not doing their job, really, to a certain extent, when they definitely are. Yeah, very interesting stuff. Kate mentioned earlier on that in a way the work goes on and on, it carries on. And I wondered about, you know, just at the end of the conversation, I wondered whether it was possible to talk about what comes next. Is there, if people want to find out more about the project, where do they find, could they find out more about it? And if so, where? And what happens next for you in terms of the project?
Yeah, absolutely. The project itself, we're just with the second phase of schools that we're working with, which has been really interesting. But what has thread through the whole of this project is actually the work that Kate has really predominantly led on, and that's the documentation and capturing the voices, so that we have got two key documents that are just finished proofreading, so that will be going out at some point that people can access. There will be a small cost to that, around setting up a reception nursery provision, so a foundation stage unit, and setting up a separate document, setting up reception year one document, that looks at those key things to think about for leaders. It looks at all the key elements that we've actually discussed today, Andy. It goes through each of those and it gives the key things for leaders to think about to support them move through those, that journey and for practitioners as well. And I think it was really important to us to have both of those voices so that even if the project isn't working physically, where we all have a budgie school and we all have networks, I mean, that's a luxury, isn't it? It would be great to have that situation all the time, but we just don't. What I would say to any practitioners is look at the documents that we've got. Look as wide as you can, and there is much more documentation about Reception Year One coming out across lots of different platforms. For setting up nursery units, it's exactly the same. Look at that, but try and find somebody within your local authority that's actually been there and done that. And this sounds really... And it is difficult for schools to do that because schools are kind of in their own bubbles. We've had the fortunate position where in a local authority, we can cherry pick people and say, these have done exactly what you're doing. Work together. We'll support you with that. And for local authorities to even think like that, I think there's more and more investment in buddying schools, peer support, which I find absolutely invaluable. But it's got to be the right school with the right school. So I think there's lots of messages to move forward, and anyone thinking about and in the position of setting up a new provision, get as much support as you can from wherever you can find it, but then really nail what you want to be doing. And some of the guidance we've got will support with that. In Durham, we have still got a support team that will actually support schools with that. I'm not sure what happens in other local authorities or academy change, but seek out the support right from the beginning.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. What strikes me as well about the project is that this isn't a surface level project in any way, is it? You know, what comes across loud and clear, I think, in all of the things that you've been sharing about the project is the depths to which you've gone into it in terms of the curriculum discussions, the timetabling, the logistics, the resourcing, the staffing of it, the link between senior leaders and the staff who are in the classroom, and also then parents and what works, and finding out those key things about what works is what people will be striving for, you know, because that's the hard thing, isn't it? It feels like you're stepping into the unknown when you go into kind of creating a mixed age class within a school when you've never had one before. But actually, you're really not, because actually there are lots of things out there, as you say, and I think this will really, really help people.
Yeah, I think, Andy, one of the last things is often we have lots of documents and guidance and things that we can find on social media that show something that has worked well. And people think that that is the only way and that's what they try to achieve, and they try to pick that up and put it into their context. What we didn't want to do in this project was give a document that said, and this is what you need to do for your timetable, this is what you need to do for this. The whole of the document doesn't tell you what to do. It tells you what to ask. And I think that is the way that all sorts of guidance and things should move forward, in terms of reflect on your school context and see what works for you, because there's no right or wrong answers.
No, absolutely.
It's prompts, isn't it? I think it's that, you know, providing thinking as, you know, as leaders, as teachers, what would have been helpful to prompt our thinking about this rather than what would we have had to do? Because you can't predict for any, you know, every school is different. So we've really tried to get something that is, the document can always be like your buddy asking you the questions and prompting you to think about different things, but it won't give you a quick fix, I think, would be the...
No. But knowing to a certain extent what's worked in other schools gives you a starting point, but you then have to really adapt it to your own situation and work out what works for you.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Interesting stuff.
Yeah. Currently, Andy, we don't have a platform where the guidance sits, because it's just at the proofreading stage. We will have a link that people can access to get to it. But in the meantime, if anyone was interested in learning more about it, then they could just contact me at Durham at my email address, and then we'll be able to see if we could support in some way.
Perfect. Perfect. Thank you both of you for joining me for the podcast today. It's been brilliant.
It's been lovely.
It's been really lovely. And yeah, as I say, such a lot of depth there in terms of the project. You know, you've clearly gone into it in such a way where you found out and built those relationships and really kind of then sort of looked into where, you know, where the issues are and worked out on that buddying system of actually, well, how do we sort those issues and what works? Yeah, interesting stuff. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you. It's been an absolute pleasure.
So there you go. Thank you very much to Anne and Kate for joining me on the podcast this week. And of course, thank you to you people for listening along as well. That's about it from us. Have a good week, everybody, and we will see you next time.